Absolutely a pleasure to be with you here today. We're going to be talking about one of our favorite topics, smart buildings, not general technologies as it might relate to, you know, operating a real estate company or a generic theme, but more specifically, what is a smart building and what are the benefits of it? And we're taking a look at it from a global perspective. So we've had guests on from various parts of the world, the UK, other parts of Europe. We are planning some guests coming in from Singapore, Asia, in the weeks and months to come, just trying to figure out the time differences. But the topic of smart buildings as it relates to energy efficiency, sustainability, has been one that's been around for a long, long time. So before I bring on the guests, I want to give you just a quick historical context on the conversation of smart connected buildings. So if we bring up that first slide, our journey really started in 2002. And the article was Network Appliances Connecting Buildings and Processes to the Net, or to the Internet, or to the Network. Most of the early founders of RealComm, myself included, came from a technical IT background. And we said, it's not about disparate systems that don't talk to each other. It's about basing a smart building on IP or on the Internet. From there, we actually wanted to visualize it and put it into a diagram. And this was really kind of showing what the architecture of a smart building would look like. I think this was first designed and conceived in about 2013 is my best guess. We're on some, actually I take that back, it was pre 2010 because we were flying back from Dubai from one of our events. This shows disparate systems onto a network, secured, going into an operating platform, and then ultimately at that far top right, the business process automation, or as we know, machine to machine learning. And finally, a couple years ago, because of there was a lot of confusion about old systems and buildings and current systems and future IoT, we came up with this illustration that said, the past, it was Johnson, Honeywell, Siemens, disparate, disconnected, present, integrated, interoperable, really making an attempt to talk to each other. In the future, building Internet of Things, where all devices come native IP or IT ready, and they go up through clouds and edge devices, and it all works seamlessly. So that is our starting conversation. I got two great guests who are going to tell us a little bit about what's going on in North America. We've got Thano Lombrinos, the VP of Smart Building Technology and Digital Innovation for Quadreal, and Joe Amador, founder of Amador Consulting. Guys, so good to see you. How are you?
Fantastic, Jim. Thanks for having me as always, and it's good to see you too.
Yeah,
Joe, thanks, good to Jim. See you. It's good to be here.
You know, and I have so much respect for both of you guys. Thano really kind of leading the way at Quadreal, pushing the envelope, doing some really unusual things, good things, some things that the market, sometimes look at you, but you inevitably prove them to be, them to be wrong and you to be right. And Joe, as a consultant touching so many different organizations, you really have a good lens into what's going on the streets. Specifically in the United States, as it pertains to smart buildings, correct?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I would say it also stretches beyond the operators of the buildings, the owners and operators, to the vendors who are deploying solutions or trying to develop the next generation of solution. And then to some degree, even the investors who are looking at the space, who have already been investing in the space and are looking for what's next for an individual company or those who are interested in this space, and kind of melding all that together.
The reason I brought up those illustrations to start our conversation was because at the second half, after the commercial, I want to get to, why is it taking so long? Something as common sense as, IP connected buildings and integration and all the benefits that come. Why is it taking so long? But before we get to that part of the conversation, Thano, let's start with you. You're young, you've got great ideas, you're full of energy, you're getting things done. Tell me what you did at Quadreal that what was your vision? What was your plan? And tell us where you are today with your smart building strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm getting older every day, but I do appreciate the comments on my youth. I started at Quadreal a few years ago, running the digital innovation team. And really what we noticed is that, a lot of the slides that you showed are still relevant today, but still not widely implemented. Even though we're talking about 2007, 2008, it's still not there. So what I tried to do was take a very pragmatic and stepped approach to implementing the various foundational elements of technology that we needed to then build on top of to eventually get to the business processes, machine learning, AI, and all of the advanced things that we're just starting to break into now. So we looked at a lot of the same slides that that you showed and identified what was available and what was changing in the market to allow us to start building that digital foundation. And thankfully at QuadRail, we had support from the top down to start implementing that digital transformation and that digital infrastructure that was required to get to those next levels. The problem that I see in the market, like you mentioned, we can talk about this after the break, is that a lot of people are trying to race to the finish line without building a strong foundation. And just like we build our buildings, unless you build a strong foundation, it makes it near impossible to realize the architect's vision that's been put on top of that. And the other problem is the foundation isn't sexy. So it takes a lot of
that's it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. So that's
the boring stuff.
That's kind of the approach that we took to get through the stuff that wasn't super appealing and attractive to the folks looking in on it, and so that we could get to the stuff that would ultimately allow us to realize all that value.
Well, and we will hold this conversation until the break, but I want to add a little color to what you just said. You know, when I see all these new technologies and new ideas coming out as it relates to smart buildings, they're very incremental. They're very singular focused, right? And I say to people, why would you want to just try to cost justify a project like this on one little aspect? It's not just energy. It's not just operational efficiency. It's not just health and wellness. It's not just occupant experience. It's everything. And to your point, if you build that foundation, those aspects are easy to plug in. But if you start, you know, whack-a-mole, you know, one application here, that's not going to end well. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what, you know, generally speaking, over the past 5, 6, 10 years has been happening in the industry. The short-sightedness of this industry, real estate in general, has caused us to chase those point solutions that are trying to deliver on very quick wins while ignoring all of the major foundational things that were so messed up about this, about our buildings, about our portfolios in the first place. So you know, I was lucky enough to get to an organization that allowed me to articulate that vision and believed in it so that we could take those steps approaches. And now we're starting to realize the fruits of our labor, and through 21 and 22, you're going to hear some huge things out of what we're doing.
Well, there's a bunch of executives in your company, like Cheryl Gray and others, who are visionaries or pushing the envelope. And I think it's that collective mindset, I think, that's going to put you guys way on top.
Yeah. If it wasn't for, I got a shout out to Cheryl. If it wasn't for her, we wouldn't have even gotten started in the first place, and I wouldn't have had this opportunity. So, she's
been a warrior for a while.
Absolutely.
So, Joe, tell us, you see a lot on the streets. You're in the weeds with big companies. Give us your perspective on what's going on. Smart buildings, United States of America.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last comment that Thano, that you made, I think is great. We'll pick that back up after the break, because I have some comments there. I think what's interesting, if we look at pre-pandemic and then post-pandemic, pre-pandemic, we did have a lot of smart building tech. But you had some maybe foundational barriers or friction points. There were certainly risks around, do we want to put those data into the cloud? Or what could go wrong if we put those data into the cloud? And in some ways, the forced adoption, and that's a term you hear really when generally we're talking about technology in the pandemic, but you saw that in buildings where, well, do I really need to send all of my facility staff to the building every day when I don't really know if it's even safe for them? You know, a lot of office buildings, if we look at offices as one, the subject of our discussion here, but also just very much the early adopters, I would say, in smart buildings, or among the cohorts that are early adopters, they didn't have a lot of occupants, right? So people were not working in the offices, but you couldn't turn the buildings off. And there's been, you know, all kinds of data here. But there was some forced adoption of, oh, if I can remotely connect to my building automation system, and I can actually determine that, one, we're ventilating enough to keep it safe for the janitorial staff and the facility staff and so on and so forth, maybe I, as the chief engineer, don't have to go in every day. And oh, actually nothing went wrong. Everything went pretty well. And that, as a kind of a forced pilot, if you will, not really an official pilot, but as a forced pilot, I think that has caused people to realize, actually, there's opportunities here with technology. And then you've seen that kind of build from, well, we have a lot of employees that want to come back to the office, but we aren't really sure everyone's coming back every day. So can we use technology to help us, one, understand who wants to come back, when they're coming back, help them find a place to work, help us understand more at an analytical basis what spaces are being used, what spaces are not being used. And I think you're starting to see individual companies. I mean, still, there's a lot of point solutions out there. That's something we can talk about. But you have a lot of solutions that are solving individual problems that maybe came out of something we observed during the pandemic or something that we are trying to solve to get people back into the office. Right. And I think we all remain pretty bullish on offices generally, even if we agree or if I think it looks a little bit differently moving forward. And then you have these other kind of emerging issues. This is the last point I'll make, but energy management, we saw occupancy drops significantly. There was a great article in Fast Company. There's been other articles. Occupancy dropped significantly, yet energy consumption maybe dropped to 80% of a baseline at the height of the pandemic or, March, April of last year. Why is it only at 80%? Why isn't it 50%, 40%? Now, we know there's reasons for that, but it's also, you could argue, there are opportunities to do better around data collection, data analysis, automation, optimization, maybe above automation. And does that become a financing mechanism, right? If we can save a lot of energy, can we finance? Go ahead.
What's really interesting, you bring up a good point that the pandemic got people to focus on remote management, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's the first chapter of a 30-chapter book, right?
It is.
That should have been done 15 years ago, right? I mean, That's step one. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if I can not have to go into my building to see how it's running? All the other things that come, the advanced analytics, whether it be from space utilization or energy consumption, That's where the real value propositions lie. And if we're just at first base or the first chapter now, when we should have been there 15 years ago, what's it going to take to accelerate that? And that's going to be the conversation we'll talk about after the break. But before we get there, Thano, going back to you, and I'm going to have Joe answer the same question. What was the biggest innovation as far as the built environment, smart building technologies that you've seen in the last 12 months? One technology, one application. What really caught your attention?
To be honest with you, there hasn't, we've just talked about this, there's not a lot that's brand new. It's just iterations on stuff that we've seen in the market and application of those technologies. So the innovation has almost been taking what's been there and actually putting it in, right? And I can speak, the pandemic is really, has opened this door to start putting in a lot of those IoT technologies that we did. We deployed people counting sensors across our common areas in our portfolio to get a sense of how many people were coming into our buildings. We deployed indoor environmental quality sensors. We started to deploy customer platforms and tenant applications that we developed so that we could get a sense and feedback of what our customers were doing and how they were interacting or how they wanted to interact with the space. So I wish I could say that there was something that I saw in the last year that I said, holy smokes, like this is gonna change everything. But I've been saying like there's stuff that already exists that's gonna be able to change everything. We just haven't done anything with it.
Right. And at the latter part of our conversation after the break, we're gonna talk about China a little bit and the speed that they're going as a juxtaposition against what we see here in the US and other parts of the world. Joe, real quick, any big idea?
I'll be real quick. I'm a little bit in with Thano on his point. I think one area that I'm really excited about and interested in is maybe using technology to connect the supply, the labor that goes into running our buildings with the demand for running the buildings. And I've written a little bit about this, so anyone who wants to talk more can reach out. But I think specifically buildings that have people running the building, like a facility manager, use less energy, operating costs are lower. So that makes sense. So there's an advantage there. There's a huge shortage in that labor because generally the average age is like 50 plus. And you also have new tech-enabled solutions that can connect what's really fragmented. If you look at the dynamics of the market of we're an HVAC contractor, we're a lighting or electrical contractor, those are typically small companies and they typically don't have a lot of the business infrastructure that they might need to really run and scale their business. But at the same time, you look at equipment, individual buildings, more sensors, can that data just automatically bid out to a cohort of service providers that can come and service that building? Can that be more of a efficient process that allows people at a lower cost to get the service they need? And we move away from what's traditionally called, if you're thinking HVAC, a break fix mentality. When that rooftop breaks, I'm going to just replace it.
I call that
that's an exciting area. Go ahead. Yeah.
I call that one truck roll versus four truck rolls.
Yeah, exactly.
Efficiency like we've not seen. All right, let's take a brief break and we're going to come back and continue.
Intelligent Buildings is the only company focused solely on smart building advisory and managed services at scale for both new projects and existing portfolios. We can guide your smart building planning and execution for new construction, as well as assess your buildings globally for vulnerabilities and opportunities. We can then continuously monitor, manage, and remediate the inherent risks from contractors and control systems. Since 2004, we are the most trusted and experienced name in smart building services.
All right, we are back. Great conversation. We're going to run out of time again, but we're going to try to get as much packed in as we can. Okay, guys, so Nance, if you wouldn't mind, bring back that one illustration for like 15 seconds of the disparate systems, the network, the operating system, because this slide, we took a lot of time to put this together, and it evolved over years. Hundreds, if not thousands of people have inputted into this conversation. And if she can't find the asset right now, that's fine. You guys remember it. All the disparate systems onto the network. But more importantly, up on the top left-hand corner of that slide, it said, why do we do this? And it had energy conservation, natural resource conservation, operational efficiency, financial optimization, health and wellness. It had all the different things. So it had the benefits listed as well. Mm-hmm. That document was probably drafted in the 2008 to 10, finalized in the mid-2015. So there were enough people thinking about it. Here's the number one question to both of you. Why is it taking so long for this not to be a mainstream thought that every new building has it built into it? Every retrofit should be, you know, is using this as a reason to retrofit. Thano, you're on the ground daily around building people. Why is this still not mainstream thinking?
A couple of reasons that I alluded to earlier. It's not exactly very attractive to, it's not a sexy, you're not solving a sexy problem. You're putting network infrastructure and connecting building systems as a means to an end. And so because of that reason, and because it was very difficult to articulate the ROI around that specific process and getting that infrastructure in place, it didn't really happen. And that alongside the fact with up until very recently, traditional networking infrastructure was extremely expensive to deploy. Your enterprise network infrastructure to deploy to support base building was very expensive and needed to be refreshed every 5 to 7 years. And so I wrote an article for you guys not too long ago about our big rollout where we leverage passive optical network technology to be able to stand up and connect all of our building systems to ultimately realize all of those benefits that you talked about, which we've quite literally just completed across our commercial portfolio and are looking into our other asset classes and how we'll enable the implementation of that technology through those asset classes. So it's been a couple things. It wasn't the most attractive thing to solve for. The technology at the time was prohibitively expensive, and it was difficult to justify to an asset manager or to somebody that is looking at the bottom line for the assets. But now what we're seeing is those costs are coming down. New technologies that before may not have been viable to support that use case are starting to become more viable. And you're starting to see more adoption of it in existing buildings and in new construction. So yeah, I think that was the big problem back when you created that slide.
So if you have 10 CEOs of the biggest real estate organizations listening to this show, what do you tell them in 30 seconds or less?
30 seconds or less, unless you lay an appropriate digital foundation, unless you do the things that aren't sexy to the business, you'll never realize the outcomes that we all are trying to accomplish in our built environments. You'll never be able to deliver the customer experience that everyone aspires to deliver. You'll never be able to realize the operational efficiency that we all are driving for unless you invest in that infrastructure. You invest in the layers that sit on top of that infrastructure. Again, unsexy things like data normalization and integrating systems into common platforms to streamline the way that you do business. And then on top of that, then you know, if you make that investment, I can guarantee just by the early wins that we're starting to see that that there are huge opportunities on the other side. But you have to trust the fact that the digital infrastructure, connectivity, and transformation in real estate is the way to go.
Well, I mean, if you want to put a physical image in your head, imagining opening the hood of a car in the 70s and the 80s, you'd open it up. There was no computers. It was a bunch of analog, you know, carburetors and manifolds and engine blocks. Open up a hood of a car today, and you can easily see that the automobile industry has transformed into a computer on four wheels, okay?
Yeah.
The built environment has not done that yet. And my plea to those same 10 CEOs is, look at the automobile industry, how they transformed. We're terribly behind. Joe, what are you seeing on the streets?
Yeah, I think, you know, to echo the points Thano made, he's making very valid points that I totally agree with. I would also say that the way we, you know, initially build the buildings, if you just look at the life cycle, across the life cycle, there's some challenges. There, you're dealing with a general contractor who has subcontractors who are oftentimes looking at, you know, what's the lowest cost bid. I'm going to go with the lowest cost bid. And you know, an owner like Quadrail would step in for new buildings and probably say, no, we're not just looking for lowest cost. We're actually looking for unified data infrastructure, extensibility, so that we can be ready for the future, really, is what it comes down to, ready for new technologies, new solutions, new needs in the future. And there are a lot of innovative property owners out there. I think one challenge is, if you have an older asset, you've owned it, you're planning to sell it in the coming years, making the numbers work can be challenging. But I also think, to add to another point that you made, when you look at some of that data infrastructure or data architecture, some of it is just technical enough that it's not really common knowledge. So we have standards like Haystack, good standard, right? We have Brick as well. The whole idea of, if you want to connect to a building automation system, it's actually pretty painful to do that. If you do it manually, it's maybe not as painful if you're hiring somebody to do that, but it's going to take a while. It's not necessarily going to be a long-term solution because you're adding new points to your BAS, your new equipment's coming on, new old equipment's being taken off. So there are technology solutions to do this now. They're at an early stage. I would say the recognition of that as a necessary component, just to give an example, is not 100% of the market. And Moreover, you have some, you know, you have some question around standards. Do I want to use Brick? Do I want to use Haystack? Do I want to use something else? There are standards to align the standards. And so it I can see why if you're a vendor, you might want to just get around this quickly and just go close business and grow and show your investors, look, we're growing.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to get one more. I want to get one more question that's tied to that, and we only have like 2 or 3 minutes, so I would ask you to just respond quickly. And we're going to do another show on this whole topic. It seems that China's on a tear with technology: 5G, 6G, AI, facial recognition, quantum computing, space technology. I mean, they're on a tear, and I've been told over the last 12, 18 months, I've seen it for longer than that their smart building world is moving at a much faster clip than ours, whether it's smart buildings, smart districts, smart cities. Thano, thoughts on what you see over on that side of the world as far as the smart building world goes?
Yeah, for sure. And I spent some time in Seoul and South Korea, and I can echo that. They are very advanced in the things that they're doing in their built environments. Obviously less concerned, especially in China, about things like privacy. I would argue that in North America, you know, we're trying to deliver the same solutions and be able to satisfy those privacy concerns. So, you know, those videos that you see in those Asian buildings where folks are walking in and facial recognition, touchless experience, they get all their services and everything they need. We're going to get there. We're a bit behind, absolutely. But we're going to get there, and it may not be facial recognition. It may be an opt-in mobile credential that gets us there. And that's what actually the direction that Quadrail is going. So, you know, I read all the articles, and we are behind China, we are behind South Korea, we are behind some of those nations. But I think the things that we're doing now, especially that we're doing at Quadrail, is going to catch us up pretty quick.
Yeah, I agree. And I think privacy is something that absolutely has to be considered and preserved.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to move maybe twice as fast, because we're going to have to understand these technologies, the benefits, but privacy is going to have to be a consideration. And that's some complex thinking that goes on.
I think we can realize the same use cases and satisfy privacy.
I totally agree. Joe, final thoughts on what you've seen over there?
I was just going to say, I mean, for me, South Korea is actually a good place to watch, because on one hand, they do have kind of a posture of let's adopt technology, let's deploy technology. I've been there. There is a lot of technology that's just, it helps you run your space if you're in a hotel, if you're in an apartment. But they also are a democratic nation. There's the rule of law. So they have some of the things that we adhere to and love in America as well. The thing that's different about South Korea is they've kind of massively expanded their economy over the past 50, 70 years. So there's been a lot of new building. It isn't, oh, this old building that is historic, that is in the best part of town, we want to keep the building. Obviously, we have, you know, a value of the history in America. That adds some complexity when you're trying to adopt technology. But that's the country that I think, among others, that there's kind of,
that
you
was
probably
one of the,
learn
that
a lot
the,
from them.
That was, yep, the place we visited in 2004, that set RealCom Smart Building Journey underway. Absolutely. South Korea was the place that we started. You're spot on. Spot on.
Yeah.
Guys, I apologize. We are out of time. We are going to have an episode on Asia tech. We won't just limit it to China, because I agree there's other parts in that region. But hopefully we can get you back and we can get some people from that part of the world to speak on it. I think it would make for an interesting conversation and very valuable to everybody. So thank you so much. You have a great weekend and be well.
Thank you, Jim, for the opportunity.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, God, I race the clock every week because these conversations are great and just don't know where to stop. All right, with that, let's bring on Howard Berger, who's going to share with us the news this week. Howard, how are you doing?
I'm good, Jim. Thanks.
Let me get out of your way quickly.
All right, and thank you, Thano, Joe. Great show today. Now, I'm going to get right into the news. So every week we highlight a few of the stories from our weekly news briefing, released every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific. And our lead story this week's by Brenna Walraven. She's CEO of Corporate Sustainability Strategies. And in this story, she recaps a conversation she recently had on a RealCom webinar where industry leaders Sarah Neff of Kilroy and Ryan Tynes of Hudson Pacific, they illustrated examples of how they use planning process and smart building technologies to achieve energy savings and really realize value creation potential of ESG. So commercial buildings, you know, they're major contributors to climate change. Half the states now have greenhouse gas emission targets of 50% reduction by 2030 and net or near net zero by 2050. And a lot of the Fortune 500 companies are committed to carbon neutral by 2030. And this is going to require some serious goal setting and tracking. And that means you're going to need tech infrastructure and tools to enable, to develop, monitor, report carbon neutrality goals. So Brenna touches on these. And she's going to be doing a deeper dive in an expanded article that's going to appear in our April Edge magazine. Next, I'd like to give a special shout out this week to our tech partner and the thought leadership of Julie Miner, partner real estate advisory services leader of the Americas for Cohn Resnick. And this is all about trust as a service, looking externally to improve digital capabilities and reduce operating expenses. Now, the pandemic's accelerated the pace and the need for digital transformation of our organizations, which prior to 2020, many companies, they paid lip service to it, but they never really got it off the back burner. Now that these requirements for digital services are front and center, a lot of companies don't have the skills and resources to handle the workload. So now there's a need to look to outsourcing and managed services in order to build the systems and processes and make sure they're rock solid so they can engender trust both internally as well as with clients and investors. So great article. Thank you, Julie. And finally, I think we've all been wondering about the next chapter of the WeWork story. Now, they just announced they're going public through a merger with BowX Acquisition Corp, a SPAC, which valued WeWork at $9 billion. With 23 million square feet, WeWork is the largest tenant in both Manhattan and D.C. And late last year, WeWork exited about 106 pre-open and underperforming locations, but they still have 851 remaining locations. The good news is that this deal is going to infuse some much needed capital so it can pay its lease obligations to landlords and maybe expand operations in high demand areas while continuing to right size. Market still seems to question whether or not their business model is signing long-term leases with landlords coupled with their high markups on short-term memberships is valid or fundamentally flawed. So that remains to be seen. Unfortunately, I'm out of time. That's it for today.
That seems to be the asset of the day, time. We're running out of it. Great job as always, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Well, another fast-paced show. Lots of topics, lots of conversations. Let's hear from our final sponsor, and I'm going to come back and tell you a little bit about next week's show.
Ready to reconceive, reshape, renew, and rebuild? We're talking buildings of the future. It's the perfect time to renew our living ecosystems to be smarter, safer, sustainable. Retrofit with the hardware, software, and services that create real resilience. Redesign with more digital, more electric, and more efficiency. Retool so they revise, react, and respond to our needs. Life is on.
All right. Well, what we covered in that episode was a lot of where those two companies were doing, both as an end user, owner, operator of real estate, and a consulting company, what was going on in the market today in North America, what their thoughts on were Asia, why adoption is so slow, how we crammed that into 20 minutes, I don't know. We are going to have another great show next week. We're going to slow things down a little bit. We had this guest on before, and we talked about the new development in Washington, D.C. called National Landing. So we are going to bring our folks in from J.B. Smith again, and we're going to take some time, and we're going to look at the project in a little more detail. It is evolutionary, revolutionary. It's a district. It's going to involve smart building technologies that we have not seen. We've got 5G being deployed at a level, CBRS, private networks. We're going to slow it down. We're going to take an in-depth look at that particular project, and it's a show you're not going to want to miss. So with that, I bid you farewell. Have a great weekend, and we will see you next week.